thanks to our sponsor, Raygun. Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack, down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night, knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 383. Today, AC and I are going to talk about prepping for the MS-600 exam and a whole bunch of news from around Microsoft World. Recorded live, October 30th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. Back to the show. AC, it's been nice knowing you. Good luck for survival next week. The US might drop off the map. Really not sure what to say to all of our listeners, but whatever happens, we'll be thinking of the show and trying to get another episode out on Thursday. We'll see what happens.
I guess what you're saying is that it's good that we made it 4 years. We've been doing this now 4 years in October.
Crazy.
At the end of our first episode was October 2016. And yeah, it's been 4 years. So
hold on. No. Hold on.
Oh, no, wait, longer
what
than
what are you talking about, 20, Willis?
2016.
Yeah, that's not right.
Hold on. Did I just screw up our own show?
Yeah. We've definitely been going like, I want to say 6 years.
CJ's like, oh my God, I cannot take this anymore. This has been going way too long. Let's go. I'm going all the way back. I'm fact checking ourselves. This is live fact checking for it. This is not like a debate. Yes, October the 23rd, 2013.
You don't even remember our anniversary.
I didn't get you. Okay. I'd like to just kind of roll that back a little bit. And I will say, at least we made it seven years. We've made it 7 years doing this.
Wow.
Now.
What?
So
crazy.
Yeah, today's a big day for all of our listeners who are not in the United States and have been able to tune out the fact that we have our national election going on today. It's actually been going on for a couple of weeks, but today is the big in-person day vote, the day this episode is coming out on Tuesday, November the 3rd. For those of you that are in the US.
We don't know the outcome.
We do not know the
outcome. You and I are, we're not let into these details, no. You know, five days early or whatever it is.
We're not recording under embargo. Not like we've done in the past. But and to all of our listeners who are in the United States, if any of you have been able to actually tune this thing out over the last year, I mean, we'd love to have you on the show. I'd love to find out how you've done that. But
how do you do that? Yes.
How do you think the election's going to affect the Microsoft cloud? CJ?
Not one bit.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm sure we could find things to slice and dice with it, but I don't see it having that much of effect on our work lives all that much.
No, not on a day-to-day basis. Oh. I could say things like, would the Jedi contract have been awarded to Microsoft under a different administration? Some people would argue yes.
Okay.
Some people would argue no.
I thought you were going to take a position on that. I was like, wait, really? You think
no.
So?
No, I think Microsoft won it on their merits, but some people would argue that that's not the case.
Yeah.
Right? So you could say things like that may have been different. I'm not sure. But on a day-to-day basis, not one iota. Microsoft are killing it, and they will continue to do really well, I think, regardless of who the next administration is.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference in their business, at least.
Yeah.
From a macro level, I don't see it being that big of a difference.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, what's been up with you?
Facebook, if they were a social media company, who, like, I think it would make, I'd say, very different things, right? It could be a very different kettle of fish, depending on who's the next president.
So that's going to be interesting, though, because I can see both sides having a, like in the last week, let's see, who was it? It was Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, and Google was the other one, right?
Yes, I think so.
So they were all there. Unfortunately, Satya didn't get the invite, even with the whole TikTok attempt, but that's a joke. But I can see, like, from the Republican side, the president doesn't like the way he's treated on Facebook and on Twitter because of, like, flagging things that he's gotten labeled with things he's said about questionable posts and stuff like that. But then I can see on the Democrat side, them being really frustrated with the way that how these platforms have been used for like information style warfare or for...
Yep, foreign interference.
Yeah, I shouldn't say warfare. I'd say interference is probably better.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I can see both sides kind of having a very negative effect on social media. It's going to be really curious to see where that, what happens with that space over the next couple of years.
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely think there's arguments to be made from both sides on that, right? Yeah. And fairly valid arguments from both sides on that. So I'd say if Microsoft were in that business, which is why I'll go back to, I'm stoked they didn't end up getting TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure Satch is also wiping his brow going, bullet dodged.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad.
I hope he is.
I'm glad they didn't get that.
But yes, we will see. I doubt it will have much impact on Microsoft. But hey, let's see what the tone of next week's episode is, and we'll reconvene then and see how I feel about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, before that, we've got businesses to run and lives to live and all that sort of stuff. So, life will go on.
Life will go on. I'd love to know how I'm going to feel like next Thursday when we sit down to record.
Yeah.
Like being able to look back at the previous 2 days.
Yes. Yes. And I get it. Lots of people have got different points of view and all that sort of stuff. But man, I just want certainty again and just to move on, because all of this uncertainty is quite unsettling for the country.
Certainty, have the election outcome be decided and have there be no chaos.
You're not asking for much, are you?
Well, yeah. I'm not saying that, that I'm expecting there to be like riots in the streets and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, people have talked about that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that people are talking about it like they're going to do it. It's just that it's been brought up in the media a bunch of times. And it would be nice to have a definitive election without civil unrest and everything is decided. Yes. And it just
totally.
Let's move on.
We can hope for that.
That's my hope. I have a side that I fall on. We're not going to go to it. I'm not going to go to it in the show. So I have a very specific hope of what I think happens. But living in Florida, it's been incredible. It's been very interesting to watch. But just watching the numbers, watching how things play back and forth, the impact of different things. So I'm really looking.
You live in one of the linchpins, right? So it's must be. I feel like I'm just sort of. I mean, I've voted and I've done my part, but I sort of feel like. I don't feel important as part of this because Washington is just not in play as an important state.
Yeah. Here's a good example. For listeners who don't live in one of these what they call the swing states or the big places. So it looks like all the people that know what they're talking about with this stuff. It looks like states like Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania. Those are the really big ones. I mean, then you could talk about things like Georgia and Texas and Michigan and Wisconsin and blah, blah, all that kind. You go all these places. But Florida, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania is where everybody's eyes are. And you can see that's where the two candidates are spending their time. Living in one of those states, one of our friends sent me a message this morning and said, so what's it like? Is your phone getting lit up with robocalls and texts and stuff? And I'm like, well, no, my phone, I'm getting a lot of calls. I don't know if they're political ads, but I can tell I'm getting a lot of them. I have that feature on your iPhone that turned off. It says silence unknown callers. Mm-hmm. I don't do that during political season. I do that all the time. And I noticed that, I've got about 10 or 15 calls I'm getting a day that are just going straight to voicemail or they're not even getting picked up.
Wow.
Other places are getting texts. I'm not getting texts. And my theory is that, I live in Florida, so the demographic is much older. And I think that's much more of a phone call kind of a thing and less of a texting kind of thing. So,
gotcha.
It's interesting. But
I'd love to see some of the tech behind all of this, just out of interest,
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, your story is quite interesting. 10 or 15 calls a day. I don't get any.
Oh, yeah.
No texts, no calls. I don't think I've been called once this year.
I just got another one. Hey, I'll show you. While you're looking, I'll show you my phone. Let's see if you can see those. So,
oh my gosh,
yes, look at you that. Can see 2 p.m., 10, 10.
Wild.
Those ones you see that are 5-7 yeah. ones, those are, I know that those are political ones because those are ones that are constantly calling. And 5-7-1 is part of my phone number. So,
yeah. Man, it's nuts, isn't it?
It is. It's crazy.
Now, you have been moving on to slightly different topics, slightly. You've been a really busy boy with some news you've got around a new course that you're building.
I am, yes. I've been very busy leading up to it. And I'm very busy leading up to it in terms of, I've been doing a bunch of like the planning and the marketing stuff that I've been writing for, like the website or the web pages and the emails are going to go out. But yeah, so the week that this episode goes out, I'm launching, or I'm announcing, I'm not really launching it yet, but I'm announcing a new course. It's called the Microsoft 365 Certified Developer Associate MS600 Exam Prep, which I know is a long name, but there's a reason.
You should work at Microsoft with that level of naming.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a keyword play on Google.
Yeah, but fair enough.
Yeah, so it's basically it's exam prep for the MS600 exam that you took back in December of last year, and I took in January, I think.
I think I took it on Christmas Eve. December 24th.
Okay, so yeah, you took yours then. I took mine on January the 3rd. Yeah, I've wanted to do this for a while. I decided about, I guess, March or April that this was the course I was going to do next when I finished my last one. And I finally finished the last one in June. And since then, I've been getting stuff cleaned up, getting things kind of focused, get moving on stuff. And yeah, I mean, I've already got one chapter recorded. It's almost finished. So my last course was really big, 35 plus hours, 70 some plus code, you know, demo projects,
right.
240 some odd lessons. This is going to be much shorter. My goal is for this one to be at least a third, if not a quarter of the size.
Right.
The price reflects that as well. It's much cheaper. But
gotcha.
It's different. Yeah.
So it's prep, all about prep.
Yeah.
So what do you think, like, why this? Why is there a gap? Do you see there's not good content out there for it? Like, why did you choose this one?
Couple reasons. It's a good question. So a couple reasons. Yes, there are other exam prep courses that are out there. For the most part, all of the courses that are out there, they fall into two different camps. One of them are the instructor-led courses, but those are 100% the courses that were created by Microsoft as the Microsoft official curriculum, and then training facilities are hiring a trainer to come in and go teach it. But those guys are charging, like, from the research I did, anywhere from $1,800 to $3,000 for 5 days in a classroom.
Wow.
Or in a virtual classroom. And I know I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to build a course like that. But then the other side too is I don't think you need that. And I'll explain that in a second. The other side are like the little like $9 courses on sites like Udemy. And I mean, a lot of those, when you look at them, the ratings are like a 2 out of 5 star. And the quality is not good. So the reason why I chose to do this is that I feel like I'm in a unique position because I was involved in helping create the certification. I was involved in helping create some of the materials that people use to learn on self-paced study. I built the materials that I built for Microsoft were also used to create the instructor-led course. And all that stuff is freely available without having to go take the course. And so I was like, there's a gap. And so my course, I call it exam prep for a reason. Exam prep is only in the title because that's really a keyword that people search on. But it really is more of a guide.
Gotcha.
I'm not going to teach you anything in the course in the sense of you need to know how to build a web part for SharePoint using the SharePoint framework, but I'm not going to teach you how to build a web part for the SharePoint framework because there's tons of material that's already out there that is freely available that you can go use to learn on how do I create a web part.
You also have some more material that you could point people at if they needed to learn that.
Exactly,
too.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you, people have asked me, is my SharePoint framework course, is it going to help you get prepared for the MS600, like, yes and no. It's going to focus on 1/5 of the entire course, or the entire exam. But the other side is I go a lot deeper than you're going to get tested on for that. So it basically is I'm going to leverage stuff that's already there. This is how mine's different, is that I'm going to leverage content that is already available that's out there. And I'm instead, in my course, it's going to make sure that it focuses, it's going to teach you, here's what you need to focus on. Here's what you need to ignore. If you need hands-on experience with building a SharePoint framework web part, here's a hands-on lab that is freely available that you should go take and look at. And oh yeah, by the way, I know it's good because Microsoft hired me to create this content that's published. And on a quarterly basis, I go through and Microsoft has hired me on a quarterly basis to go through all of these modules that I've done, some 30 or 40 modules, and make sure that everything is current and everything's updated. So I'm intimately familiar with the stuff that's already there.
Gotcha.
I don't think that you should, building a course on that kind of stuff, it's already there and it's already available. You shouldn't have to pay for it. I mean, Microsoft's already paid me to do it for you. So let's do that. And so I have a course that's just going to be more of, let me make sure and let me whittle down all that stuff and show here are the things that you need to go look at. And here are the kinds of, like, when you need to go build a web part, here's the stuff you need to focus on. That lab teaches you how to build a web part, but this is the part you need to make sure you really understand.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I remember doing the exam, there was, you know, the questions are pretty specific, right? Mm-hmm. They're not just, do you know everything about how to build a, you know, solution with SPFX or whatever, or about identity? There's very specific questions they ask about certain areas of those things. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you don't necessarily need to know all of it to be able to pass. Mm-hmm. You just need to, you know, hone up on certain areas. And the Teams area was one I really felt like I was not good at and that I didn't know enough on.
Well, it's funny you say that, because for the Teams area, I plan on taking the exam again, either in December or January. And the reason why is because, again, this is part of the unique position that I have with this. I know that at the end of November, Microsoft is revising the exam. Now, if you've already taken the exam and you've already passed it, you're already certified, you got nothing to worry about because nothing changes for you.
Yeah. So I don't have to do it again?
No, you don't have to do it again. But I do know that the Teams section is getting completely revamped. All the questions are. And I know how they're changing it, but I don't know how they're asking the questions. And so I'm going to go take the exam once, probably sometime in December, to make sure I know like what kind of changes they've done, so that when I build that part of my course that it's accurate and it's current. But like, that's one thing that's different. Like the instructor led course, that's not getting updated. So,
yeah.
And I know that there's other things that, here's another example that I tell people. There is stuff in the self-paced training that Microsoft has already updated, or that they've already asked me to update, that we've already updated, that you will not be tested on. And the piece that we pulled out, you will be tested on. I know that for a fact.
Huh.
Like,
curious.
So like, here's me tipping my cards a little bit. We just rolled out an update to one of the Microsoft Identity, one of the Azure AD hands-on labs, to where they've now, if you're doing a single page app, the recommended approach is to use the auth code flow for obtaining an access token. That wasn't the case about a year ago. I see your look on your face. I know exactly where you're going with this. Before, it was always use the implicit flow, right?
Yeah.
That's what ADAL did. That's what msal.jsv1 did. But over the summer, Azure AD and the industry decided that implicit wasn't as secure as it could be. So now they've been able to implement the auth code flow in a client-side solution in a secure way. Azure AD now supports it as the 100% client-side option without having a secret on the other side. And MSAL JSV2 now supports it as well. But the identity section of the exam is not getting updated in November. So you will still get a question about the implicit flow, or you might still get a question about the implicit flow. But when it talks about the auth code flow, you should not think about it in client-side apps. You should only think about it on server-side apps, because that's when the question was written. That's the kind of stuff that other courses don't have, that I'll be able to have that stuff.
Yeah, I do remember them. Actually, I just read an article about that new flow. It's not like auth code flow where you have to punch a number in. It's it's a negotiated shared secret, I suppose, between the front and the back end. But yeah, that was really interesting. So that's curious that they're doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I am a dev and I'm going to take the exam, but I'm freaking out about it, and I want your course, how long will I have to wait?
Not long. So,
Like, when should I expect to be able to go get it?
So first is go to the site. I have a link in the show notes, but go to my site and go try and buy it. And you'll see that it's like, hey, it's not ready yet. Give us your email address. We'll let you know. So you'll get on our list. So that's one thing you do today. The course is, I'm doing it the same way I did last time, which is I'm going to do a pre-release of the course. It won't be finished, but I expect to finish it early next year. I won't put this in writing, but I'm saying it's going to be done by February. It might be done before that. Things are going well right now, so let's see. But I'm recording. There's going to be six chapters in it. I'm definitely going to have two done by the time we go live for a pre-release on December the 1st, I think, the Tuesday after the first Tuesday in December. And then you'll get access to all the chapters that come after that. And I'm ordering the recording of the chapters. I've been asking people over the last year, what are you most deficient in? And so I'm recording the chapters by order of what you're most deficient in. So if you're like,
I got SharePoint down pat,
then they're like, oh, sweet, you don't have to wait for the SharePoint chapter. It's probably going to be one of my last ones because most people have said that that's the place that they are the strongest at.
I see.
So like Office add-ins is going to be early on. Teams won't be because I need to see what they've done with the Teams changes. Okay, this is a longer response to a simple question. The course will be available on December the 1st for $249. But if people keep a good eye, if you look at a calendar, you'll notice that the right before that Tuesday is what's called Black Friday and Cyber Monday weekend. And gotcha. I'm going to have a special deal on the course as part of a pre-launch that will go on sale on Black Friday through that weekend. And then that price will go away and it'll be $249. Starting on December, and then when the course is completely finished, there'll be a different price for it as well. But you get a discount if you get it early.
Yeah, it's like buying your auto driving in your Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get it before it's done.
Price goes up. Yeah, exactly.
Although my price won't go up to 10 grand.
Yeah, true. Actually, I did see that Tesla raising their autopilot prices to 10K. Cool. Okay. That's exciting news.
Yeah, it is. That'd be really good. I'm looking forward to it. This course is going to get done quick. It's going to be done early. Yeah, it's not going to be like the last one I did where it took me 3 years to get it finished or 2 years to get it finished. So it'll be nice and quick.
It was a big course, admittedly.
As I say in the blog post that's going to go out the week of this episode at the very end, that when you launch your first company, first online video business company, when you design of your first video course that you are going to self-host and put out there, when you go to record it and you have to deal with everything, including the fulfillment and all that stuff, you learn a lot. And let's just say that a lot of those lessons learned, that I am not overscoping this class. I am not overpromising this class. I have other things that I would like to do, but I'm going to keep some things reserved until I kind of see what, you know, see how customers use it, see what they think, see if they're having success passing the exam. And yeah.
Nice. All right. Shall we move on to some news?
This episode is sponsored by AvPoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe today. This podcast is brought to you by ShareGate. You probably didn't get into cloud engineering to spend hours manually sifting through layers of data or manually creating reports to understand and explain your Azure costs. Neither did the IT pros at ShareGate, which is why they built ShareGate Overcast. ShareGate Overcast is an Azure cost intelligence tool that reduces manual monitoring and helps you make cost-efficient engineering decisions, and it can help you lower your Azure bill. ShareGate Overcast scans your Azure environment daily and analyzes your cost data. It automatically identifies cost issues and gives you the insights you need to fix problems fast. Plus, with personalized cost-saving recommendations, you can be sure you're only paying for the resources you need. Best of all, you can get ShareGate Overcast for free. Find out more at ShareGate.com/cloud show. And we're back.
Okay, so we've got a bit of news to get through. Do you want to kick things off with us with something exciting?
I do. Last week we talked a little bit about this, or the day before, maybe the week before we did this, with SpaceX partnering up with Microsoft or Azure Space with their Starlink internet service.
Yep.
This is not really a Microsoft cloud thing, but because they teamed up with them in the last week or two, I thought this would be relevant. Beta Invites started going out for their service, and it's impressive what they're doing. So their Starlink satellite internet service is going to have a $500 one-time upfront cost to get the dish and the router that you need. And then it's only $99 a month for internet service. And it looks like it's going to be, initially, it's in the ballpark of 50 to 150 megs up and down. And the latency is around 20 to 40 milliseconds. But they expect things to get much better as the constellation gets bigger, better ground stations and stuff, or more ground stations and stuff like that. So it's only going to get better. As somebody who's got family who lives in like the remote part of North Carolina, this is a ridiculously good option. I saw a lot of people on Reddit like saying this is ridiculous. I pay the same amount for my fiber connection that gives me a gigabit and like less than 5 milliseconds, but fiber up where they live is going to cost literally going to cost about $20,000 to get a fiber connection where they live.
Wow.
This is a hell of an option.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm jealous. Like I signed up for the beta, I guess, but I haven't heard from them. And I know Washington State is, or Seattle region, I think in particular, is one of their regions that they're picking people because that's where they're based, right? This is where the Starlink office is, well, one of the offices, I suspect, is based. So they've kind of got a lot of people in this area that would be interested, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping I get one of the emails. That'd be excellent.
I signed up for myself. I signed up just to keep an eye on. It's not something I would buy where I am, but I signed up another email address for my parent, for where my parents and my aunt and uncle are, to kind of keep an eye on it for them as well. So
yeah, I reckon it'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah. What you got for us?
Okay. So Microsoft are launching a new industry-specific set of capabilities they're calling Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare, which there's a lot of buzzword bingo on these websites, so it's hard to know the ins and outs of exactly what it is, but it looks to me like a mashup of capabilities from things like Office 365, Dynamics, and Azure to provide sort of a more integrated solution, end-to-end solution for healthcare providers. So if you go on the website, it shows screenshots of things like scheduling appointments and reporting on patient information and doing so virtually and things. It's really hard to know, like, is this something like a hospital would buy or a doctor's office, right? I'm not 100% sure about that.
Me either.
But yeah, I think it's basically, hey, we've got this grab bag of stuff. Now let's stuff it all together, stick a label on it and call it Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare and see if people buy it. It's $95 per user per month. But, you know, honestly, I'm not in the healthcare industry, so I don't understand half the terminology they're using.
Yeah.
But it's like, is it a standalone cloud? Is it on public Azure or is it in some new, like, you know, government cloud is separate from public Azure and the DoD version of Azure and things like that. Is this some new version of that, or is it just on the public cloud? Or it just seems like this is more of an integrated industry solution than a sort of standalone set of technical capabilities.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. I mean, I read the same article and I was having a hard time understanding exactly what this is. It's interesting enough to where I kind of want to learn more about what they're getting into. But yeah, it's hard to kind of parse exactly what they're, it's hard to parse exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm a bit skeptical on stuff like this. If I was if this was pitched at a medical clinic, as the owner of the medical clinic, would I buy a industry solution from Microsoft or would I buy an industry solution from some industry provider that's been in the industry for years and years and years?
Yeah.
Probably that. I don't know. We'll see if it goes anywhere.
This week, Microsoft announced their quarterly earnings. It was very much a mixed bag, or at least the reaction was very much a mixed bag. We'll talk more about some of the news that came out of this in a little bit when we talk about Teams. But the quarter itself, so the stock went down, but it was interesting because when it came out, when the news came out, you could tell that like the second, that this quarter that just ended, the first quarter, I guess, the first fiscal quarter that just ended, the numbers were really good. They had a very good quarter. They had, you know, earnings were of $13.9 billion, $1.82 a share. That was up from $1.38 a share, so up 50 cents from the year before in the same quarter.
Yeah.
Revenue up to $37 billion. I mean, all this stuff is like, you know, when they expected, analysts were expecting an average earnings of $1.54 a share. They hit it at $1.84, so 30 cents above. So that's all really good. The thing that the analysts didn't like is that looking forward, Microsoft's projections on the future quarter for second quarter was much less. Sorry, second quarter, fiscal year, second quarter, which for yep. the rest of us is calendar year
2020.
Yeah, that's the rest of the year, the rest of the calendar
October,
year.
November, December.
Thank you. Yep. I was having a hard time saying between calendar year and fiscal year. They, what their expectations are, or their guidance was much lower than what everybody expected. And it's primarily because of launching Xbox or launching the next Xbox and how it says that, you know, it's going to be launching consoles and the expenses they're going to take from it. You generally take, companies don't make money off the consoles. They make money off all the games and stuff from the services around the consoles. The consoles are just the driver. So they take the hit on the consoles first. So it was interesting because you saw the numbers and everyone was like, wow, Microsoft is doing really good. And it's like, yeah, but the stock's down. Why? And it's the, you know, crazy, funky market. But it was just the expectation that people didn't expect that. So
gotcha. Yeah, they seem to do really well. That was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Some interesting things in there as well, like PC shipments and stuff. I don't know if you dug into some of that.
I didn't see that.
But like commercial Windows was down from where they expected it, but like retail Windows was right up because PC shipments have picked up.
Oh.
And I think it's because of the coronavirus. People are buying new computers for home.
That makes sense.
Yeah, thought it was interesting.
Huh.
If you are still running, God, I hope this is not the case. But if you're still running Windows 7 or Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, including Windows Server 2012 R2, as of the 1st of July 2021, so in, 8 months' time, you will no longer be able to get updated drivers that have been signed by Microsoft. You know how the whole signing process for drivers, there's the whole hardware qualification list and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, all of that, drivers will no longer be cross-signed by Microsoft for those. So you'll be up the river without a paddle if you're...
You'll be patchless.
Yeah. You will be not just patchless, driverless, for printers or for...
Oh, yeah.
For headsets or for video cards. Video cards is probably the big one, yeah. Right?
You'll be screwed.
Yeah, you'll be stuck on old drivers.
Because they won't update. I mean, you won't be able to install them. Windows won't let you install it. So it effectively stops all patches and all updates.
Right.
For drivers.
Nasty.
Mm.
That's one way to get people to upgrade.
Yeah, you want to know another way?
Oh, yeah.
SharePoint Online next week is actually, sorry, this episode is coming out next week as we're recording it this week. So this week is actually next week. Next week is actually this week. Confused yet? Ha. Well, guess what? First full week of November 2020. SharePoint 2010 workflows have been retired in SharePoint Online. This was first announced in July of this year and then again in September, but now SharePoint 2010 workflows work no more as of this week that you're hearing this. Well, unless the week this came out, how's that? If you listen to this in 2 months, it doesn't mean all of a sudden they're still working for you.
The week when this podcast came out. Yeah.
So the first week of November is when they're deprecating it. This one was interesting to me because I get that it's expensive to run these SharePoint 2010 workflows. I get that they don't want to do it anymore. I totally get all that stuff. But giving people 5 months notice that you're shutting down, or really 4 months notice that you're killing these workflows starting in July, when there's already a lot of like stress in the business world from what's going on with the pandemic, I'm really surprised that they did this and they didn't delay it, that they're still pushed through on this. So the guidance is to use Power Automate. There is a link that we'll have in the show notes to where you can learn more about this. It's aka.ms/sp-workflows-support. And it's Message Center ID. If you go to Microsoft 365, your portal, and you look for the Message Center ID 225133, you can learn more about it. And if you're in that camp, I'm really sorry because it's going to be probably a rough experience if you haven't migrated already.
Yeah, it's interesting that such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
They must look at the telemetry, though, and look at how many of them are running and get in touch with those customers and try to push them to do something different and get them to move. I mean, yeah, that's That's pretty rough, though.
Mm-hmm.
Go buy some Nintex.
What about K2? Oh, never mind. Sorry. Nintex has K2.
Yes, that's right. They've bought. Did we talk about that? I can't remember. Yeah, we did briefly.
Yeah, I'm sure
that
we did.
News. Yep. All right. Teams is officially at 115 million daily active users. That's a lot. Now, the curious bit about this is that they don't give a split of what types of users. So lots of these could be elementary school kids or whatnot in EDU, but it's growing a lot. So back in, where was it? 44 million in mid-March, and now they're at, what was that? 115. That's a lot of growth in a very short period of time.
Yeah. Well, no, okay. So yeah, you say that that's a lot of growth in that short amount of time, but let's go back just 1 year. Right, because in March, that was when the pandemic was really starting to settle in and the work from home order in the United States had really set in. Let's go back to October of last year, almost like an apples to apples comparison. And it was 12 million daily active users back then. And now it's over 100 million more than that. And that's 1,000% increase. It's insane. That combined with the stuff that we heard last week about Slack getting the downgrade from one of the analyst firms.
Moody's or somebody like that.
Yeah, Moody's or JP Morgan, one of the two. And it's like, they're on fire. Remember we talked to Jeff and he's like, we like to wait and, you know, announce numbers when they're nice and rounded off. Like 115 million didn't sound like it was rounded off to me, but okay, that's still pretty, that's pretty damn impressive, Jeff. Good job.
Well, it's more than 100 million. There's a nice round number.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I remember last year when Slack came out and said that it had 12 million daily active users, right? I remember us talking about this on the podcast and I said, this is a very bad idea from Slack.
Yeah.
And I remember vividly talking about this going, you're showing up to a gunfight with a knife at this point, right? It's just, you just don't know it yet. And sure enough, they've stopped talking about their daily active users and have switched to other types of things and other numbers, it was a losing battle to start with. Like, they've got a great product. Focus on that. You're not going to go head to head with Microsoft on numbers. That's for sure. It seems they learned that lesson. But yeah, they've also done things like calling Microsoft, saying that Microsoft is not a competitor and welcoming them. Do you remember that the New York Times, the single page ad or whatever from Slack?
I do, yeah.
Anyway, good grief.
It's a spa version of the newspaper, a single page ad. Sorry.
It's a spa.
Sorry, I just geeked out. Sorry, guys.
I wonder if they have as many authentication problems as Teams do. But anyway. they've done silly things like say that they're not competitors when they really, everybody knows they're a competitor.
Yeah.
But then behind the scenes, filing complaints in the EU against them for being anti-competitive and all this sort of stuff. Anywho. You know, it's hard to feel bad for Slack. They're doing a great job. They've got an awesome product and it's really nice. It's just, you know, it's hard to go against Microsoft in some of these areas, but they'll do fine in their own neck of the woods, I think, anyway. Yeah, but anyway, great growth numbers from Teams.
In the Department of Reinventing, which it seems that that's like always the fun buzzword for people to use, but from the Microsoft Dynamics 365, they are partnering with C3.ai and Adobe to reinvent CRM with artificial intelligence. So what exactly does this mean?
Bingo.
Exactly. It's like with C3.ai CRM, organizations can unlock the power of AI-driven customer relationship management, a solution purpose-built for specific industries leveraging data from source to produce predictive business insights. We need like one of these like dings kind of thing. And as I'm doing that, I need you to do like the Google ding so that when we have the, as I'm explaining it, like the Google search can just go like, let's see, let me try it again. With C3.ai, organizations can unlock the power of AI-driven customer relationship management, CRM, in a solution purpose-built for specific industries, leveraging data from any source to produce predictive business insights. That was all. You were hitting that glass as much as you could. That was awesome. It's like the Google index, like hitting it, going, oh, keyword, oh, keyword, oh, keyword. Oh.
Yeah.
It's like, good job writing that presser.
You know, there's these articles you come across every once in a while where you read the first paragraph and you've literally said a lot of words, but you really have said absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I have no idea what
you... Yeah. I have no idea what you just meant, said, what you actually do, anything like that. And it's like you've gone through the Gartner report of what are the important keywords that CIOs will pick up on, and then just like and just like verbal diarrhea it into your first paragraph.
I'm not saying that that's what Dynamics 365 did, but it was like the announcement. No, it was it's right. Just it's very fluffy, and it's very hard to kind of understand. It's a presser, and I get that you're proud of what you're doing and that you're excited what you're going to build here, but like to the real customer, they're going to look at it and go like, okay, it's cool. So what does that mean? And it's when that's the first thing that comes out, it's kind of like, so.
But AI, we've got to buy some of that.
You always have to. If it's AI, you got to jump on board.
I always loved hearing Kevin. You remember Kevin Turner?
Yeah.
Kevin Turner talking about topics he didn't understand was the funniest thing I've ever heard. But man, he nailed it. Like he was so good at it. He's a consummate salesman, right? But it was cringeworthy all at the same time. But you know, he'd talk about things like security, and you're just like, what the hell, man? Like, you know nothing about security, and yet he'd sell it to you like you're selling ice to Eskimos, right? or you know, sand to the Arabs or something like that, right? Like, it was just incredible. And he'd be like, we're going to take that security, and we're going to spread it all around on both sides of your toast, and it's just going to be delicious. You're going to love that security. And it was just so funny.
I had an experience like that. I was in a presentation. I was attending a presentation at like a local user group. Have you seen the movie Animal House?
No, I don't think I have. I know of it, but I don't think I've actually seen it.
I had no idea we were going to make news on this episode. Oh my God, are you serious? Okay, so for all of our listeners that are out there, you remember the part where John Belushi kind of has this look on his face, like just, what the hell? He says all this stuff and he's like, what did he say? Like, I don't know, just let him go. He's on a roll. And I sat in a presentation one time and a dude's giving a talk, and it was at a local like SharePoint user group, and he said MFA, and then he gave an acronym that had nothing to do with MFA. Or he spelled it out. He was talking about multi-factor auth, but the words he used weren't mixing it at all. And it was just one of those, like, you heard it. And I looked at another guy in the room and I was like, wait a minute, that wasn't right. I've never heard him. That's way off.
That sounds like a swear word Samuel Jackson would use. Yeah. Oh. I can think of an acronym that's all three of those words are swear words. I can just picture Samuel Jackson saying it.
I've got them in my head. I know exactly the words you're thinking of. I want to know what that guy said. There's a guy that Ben Sedging, the guy that was in, he's one of the co-hosts of the MS IT Pro Cloud Show podcast. He was in the room. He's the one I looked at. Like, I was like, what? And he kind of looked at me like, what? You heard that too? Like, what the hell just happened?
Ah, dear. All right. Let's finish up on this news and then we'll get on to some picks.
Yes.
I love it when Microsoft introduces breaking changes to APIs. And this week we've got one. There's a breaking change in Microsoft Graph on the user's API. There's some sanity to this. It's not completely insane. But you will no longer be able to update business phones or mobile phone attributes or properties of a user when that user is mastered from on-premises Active Directory and synced into Azure AD, whereas previously you used to be able to. Whether it made sense or not, whether you used to be able to or not, is up for debate and is a separate topic, but they're cutting that off. And their theory behind this is, or the reasoning is, you should master it in AD and then let it sync up. Interesting. Now, here's another funny fact about mobile phone. You needed special permissions. They don't talk about this in this stupid article, but you need special permissions to update mobile phone using admin only, you know, app only permissions. None of the scopes in Microsoft Graph would let you update mobile phone.
What?
Interesting, huh? Yeah, for app only.
What's so special about that property?
Because it's used for blip, 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 MFA. So what happened is you have to have like help desk administrator rights, or I can't remember the name of the role. You have to install your app and consent to it, and then you have to take that app in the customer's tenant and add additional roles to it to be able to update mobile phone, because mobile phone is used for multi-factor authentication. And so they're freaked out about an app updating the mobile phone property on a user and then logging in as that user and getting the MFA alerts on a different phone, if that makes sense.
It makes sense, yes. It's just one of those, like, what?
Really curly corner cases that isn't documented well anywhere else.
Yeah. All right.
Anywho, so maybe not being able to update it will make things easier. Because you couldn't anyway.
Exactly. So I have another one for us. This is another Graph bit of news. Graph, I think this is in the beta API. This is in the beta endpoint, right?
I'm not sure, actually.
I forget. I think it's in the beta. Yes, it is. Sorry, it's in the beta endpoint.
It is, yeah.
So there is a new capability in the beta endpoint where you can import from a third-party platform messages to Microsoft Teams from Microsoft Graph.
Slack. Oh, third party. Sorry, gotcha. Yeah.
From a third party, like Slack.
You mean ICQ.
Yeah, or ICQ. Well, I was going to say that you now have a way, with a little bit of code, you now have a way to actually find those Yammer messages because you can import them into Teams and now you'll be able to search for them and find them in places that actually make sense.
You're on fire.
Well, and then somebody else, apparently there was another API I saw somewhere that they are giving us the ability to export messages from Teams so that you can export them from Teams and import them in Yammer with the existing API. But then the paradox is you have no idea if they ever got in there because you can't find them.
Is that like Schrodinger's message?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. This is what we call the Teams Yammer paradox of if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, this is kind of cool. Yeah. I imagine migration vendors will pick up on this and build all sorts of migrations from Slack.
Mm-hmm. I wonder like how the security or the like the time stamping, I wonder how that works. Because if you have auditing and stuff turned on or you're in a regulated business or something, do you have to have something? You can't just change time.
Import. No, but they're allowing through this API, it specifically calls this out, you're allowed to import backdated messages.
So you're allowed to import backdated messages,
yeah.
But could I create backdated messages?
Well, yeah, you could import messages you just randomly made up.
Yeah, so I can't, there's no, is there any proof that it came from somewhere?
Don't think so.
That's what I was asking. That's where my point was. I wonder.
Yeah, that's curious. You see, I told you 6 months ago you should have read my message.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, what message? You never sent a message. And then I quickly go jam one in through the import API. Interesting.
It was there the whole time. And look, I even put like 50.
What about like legal stuff too?
So that's the question that I've got, right? Then I'm curious about it. Like, is it flagged as a file as something that was imported?
Surely.
I would think so.
All right, AC, it's that time of the show.
Yay.
Let's get on to some picks.
Yay. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
All right. I have a pick this week, but you have a pick this week too. We don't have a listener pick. I could have sworn you've already used this pick.
Did I use it as a pick or did I just talk about it?
You might have just talked about it. Anyway,
okay.
Your pick this week?
I will pick a different pick. I will let you go with your pick first and I'll go pick my other pick because I have a whole plethora of picks to pick from.
I actually think you haven't used it as a pick now I look back real quickly. Interesting. Okay, I got this wrong. My pick. All right. Have you ever wondered, I know you have, how in Mission Control during the Apollo era, the projection screens at the front of the Mission Control Center worked? You ever wondered that? Because they didn't have LCD projectors.
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't. Right? I haven't wondered that, but now I do. Now I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I have the answer.
Oh, thank God.
So there's a video on YouTube from the famous Fran. She's a woman who sort of vlogs or makes videos about all sorts of interesting stuff in the computer and tech space and space as well. She was the one that worked a bunch on the Apollo guidance computer emulator, I think, way back, something along those lines. But she's also got all sorts of other interesting videos about the Saturn F1 engine, things like that. Anyway, one of them is about how Mission Control's big displays worked. And she goes into, they're effectively slideshows, and the screens were made up of multiple overlaid slides. And then there was one slide projector which would be able to plot. So it would start with a slide that was completely black, so no light would go through it. and then a little plotting arm would scratch off part of the metal backing of the slide to make a trace line of where the spacecraft had travelled, and it would get projected up onto these big screens.
Whoa.
And so a lot of the screens you see are a composite of a background slide, say the surface of the moon showing all the craters. Then there'd be a slide for, you know, where the limb was, where the command module was, things like that. And then sort of all composite these views. And then one of them would be one of these plot lines to see where it had been and other data and things like that. And so it all and it's like, so you see mission control. There's a room equally as big as mission control behind those screens containing all the equipment to project up onto those screens. And it's fascinating.
Wow. Good pick, man.
It's all mechanical. You know, there are computers obviously driving it with data, right? There's big mainframes driving it, IBM mainframes driving it with data. But how all those projection screens worked and everything was all completely analog and mechanical. And it wasn't people standing behind the screens moving things around.
That's really cool, though. I had no idea. It took me a second to figure out what you were talking about. But now that I totally get it now. That's cool. I want to go watch that video.
Yeah. It's really fascinating how hard their job was to do what we take for granted now, right? They had a whole project just to figure out how to project stuff at the front of mission control. A huge project with engineering, software and hardware engineering, everything to make it all work. And now we'd just be like, what do you mean? Just turn on a projector and point it at a wall. Plug it into a computer. Away you go, right? But it blows my mind how bigger projects some of these things were to do seemingly simple things that we do today.
Yeah. You know? That's cool. Yeah. Good find, man.
Her F1 engine, rocket engine video you can also find on her channel is also very, very interesting if you're into that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I'll be diving in. Thanks, man.
Cool.
Good picks. Okay, so...
What do you got?
I'm sorry, good pick. So I now have two picks, almost had three as I was fixing it during your description of your pick. So my first pick, which I'm now not confident that I have not picked it before, so I'm going to pick it and make it a quick pick, is called Notion.so.
Yes.
So Notion is, think of it kind of like a Evernote / a OneNote kind of thing. I got rage angry at OneNote about a couple weeks ago after a bad syncing exercise and was unable to get to my notes. They weren't loading in anything. They weren't loading in Teams. They weren't loading in the web client. They weren't loading on my iPad. They weren't loading on the desktop. And then my iPad got corrupted and I had to close all my notebooks. And I had to uninstall OneNote. Then I had to go open each one. And I've got notebook. I got like 9 or 10 notebooks and they're all open from different accounts. I was like, I got so angry about it. So I was like, well, let me go see what everybody else is using. And the rest of the world has really gravitated towards this thing called Notion.
Mm.
I like to think of it, it's kind of like a very structured personal database / wiki / OneNote.
Right.
The sync is just stupid simple good. I love how fast you can put notes together. I love how there's like functionality inside of it so that building a content calendar, like when you're going to go like write emails or you're going to go write blog posts or something, building a content calendar is like super simple and adding fields to it and stuff. I mean, think about if I could build an app that had SharePoint lists, that had both a calendar view and a list view, had the ability to do things like a database, like Excel, a database of like what like Evernote is, be able to do a spreadsheet like Excel, then do stuff like OneNote does, take all that, put it together, and then just remove one piece to it, which is the ability to do handwriting. And that's what you have is Notion. So the only thing I don't like about it is that there's no simple like one click, let me import everything from OneNote over to Notion. Mm-hmm. There's a hopscotch kind of go into Evernote and then into Notion. So I'm still running mm-hmm. Evernote just web until I get my stuff moved over, which there's a way you kind of, I'll do it eventually when I have time. And I can't do like sketching. So I can't do like trying to draw out a flow to something with like the pencil on my iPad. So with that, I'm just using like the iOS Notes app and then save this, do a screenshot, and then I just embed it in the note in Notion. So that's my pick, and I'm absolutely freaking loving it. Like it a heck of a lot more than OneNote. It's a lot more flexible.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I know that Microsoft is coming out with like the universal, the last note-taking app you'll ever need kind of a thing, but from what I know about it, it's very much 100% in Microsoft 365, and I didn't want something like that in this case.
Yeah, Gotcha.
The other pick that just in case I had already picked that one. This one's cool.
Maybe we just talked about Notion before.
I know
that's probably what I'm remembering.
Yeah, I know I had talked to you about it, but this is really cool. This is a site called goodui.org. And specifically, there's a section called Leaks. And so what this is that they ran over time, they monitor different sites and they hit the same page from different platforms and geographies and stuff. And they see if they get a different screen, if they get a different experience. And so what they're doing is they're trying to test and see, is a company doing A/B testing on their UI to see what's working better? And they keep watching the A/B test, and then they report on which one won. So like the first one that they show is on Amazon.com, they did an A/B test on showing a product list, so like a very vertical list, or showing it as a grid. And the grid is what people are getting now. Another test that was run on a site called BOL.com, this test was run on September the 3rd, and it was confirmed the change happened on September 23rd of this year, that where they have a rating of 5 stars and then the number of reviews right next to it, they put the reviews in parentheses and then did what the average rating was with stars, but next to it now says like 4.7. And apparently that made a big difference. And so they rolled that out.
That's cool, being able to see all of those. The site's actually pretty cool because it shows a bunch of different information about UI patterns in general for best practices for building different types of UI. It's quite cool.
Like Airbnb, if you like a certain place, like if you want to favorite it and you want to keep it on your list, that little heart icon, it used to be on the photo and now it's off to the right of the title of the listing or the picture that you're looking at. And they chose that because more people were clicking they saw a significant uptick and people clicking the favorite thing.
That makes sense to me. I'd want to know I'm favoriting the property, not just the photo.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Cool. Good pick.
So it's fun.
Very nice. All right, AC. Well, this time next week, we will be rejoicing or commiserating or trying to keep it from our listeners, which way we feel.
It'll be over.
It will be over.
Well,
correct.
We hope it'll be over.
Well, that's true, actually. It may not be. Yes, you're very right. There might be court cases or
still counting.
Or arguments or what have you. So yeah, I guess so.
It'll be fun. If it's still going on, it'll be fun to explain to our non-domestic audience why the election is still not known yet a few days after. And to those who are not informed, but why it is very legitimate if the election is not decided or if it's not definitive on election night.
Yeah.
So
true, true.
Cool.
All right. We will reconvene next week and pick this discussion up.
Yeah, man. Good chat with you.
Have a good one. Stay safe. Stay away from all those crazy Floridians going nuts at the moment.
And it's Halloween.
Yep. And it's Halloween. Yeah. COVID candy.
Oh.
All right. Stay safe, man.
You too, buddy.
Bye.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.